The Breakfast Club.
Great Adam Whitey's ready to go on a Monday morning. Morning, Whitey.
Good morning, Half. It was a big weekend, wasn't it?
Jam-packed.
Yeah, I mean, because it wasn't just the grand final. As you said, it was a preliminary final weekend in the NRL. There was the, I can say was, the Ryder Cup because it's pretty much finished, unfortunately. Yep. Europe hasn't been able to do what it did at Medina a few years ago. It's emotional talking about it. There was the Laver Cup. There was Australia and India playing two amazing women's one-day matches. It was, yeah, there was plenty. There is plenty to talk about.
Yeah, lots to talk about. Lots to talk about. The NFL weekend continues as we speak. Who's playing at the moment?
They are the Chargers and the Chiefs, and the Chargers are in front, and the Chargers are going to win.
Unless Patrick can pull up something with 5 seconds to go.
Which he could. Which he's got one more go at it. They just dropped the pass.
To do. Mm. So more on that shortly. But Adam Romanoskis is a premiership player with the Bombers all the way back in season 2000, 21 years ago. He'll be 21st here, Rama. These days, he's manager to the Stars. Good morning, Rama.
Yes, good morning. It was a pulsating 74-point win. Yeah, you were on the edge of your seat for really the entire game. It was unbelievable how that game played out. 19 points up the Dogs, and then, what was it, 100 points to 7?
100 points to 7.
After that.
Midway through the third term.
you just got to put it into perspective and think about it for a moment. And I know we'll go through it a little bit later with Jimmy, but you could not take your eyes off the screen. For a 74-point win, it was just like, what is happening out there?
It was quite remarkable, the breakdown of the game and where it was and where it went.
Where so it started, then there's the middle part where the Bulldogs had their moment, and then the end was just, that's the best football we've seen all year from any team, in any game.
Well, just that patch.
Might be some of the best football that has ever been played.
Yeah. Yeah, correct.
It was scintillating. Absolutely scintillating.
Well, and look, there's a couple of things to talk about in that. One part of it is, the D's just simply opened the game up when they had to. And the Bulldogs could not respond.
Couldn't get the hands on the
footy. We'll speak about the 6-6-6 rule a little bit.
Yes.
And how the D's just continue to come out the front door.
That might be one of the most positive things to come out of the entire Saturday night was that rule.
Well, Steve Hocking would have been sitting back in his lazy boy at home going, I need a statue. I'm a genius, is what he would be saying.
Yeah,
Doggies fans might be saying something different, but footy fans are going, how good's this?
I must confess, Rama, to your point, I watched the third quarter again last night just to work out how it changed. Was there moments? Why did it change? Could have the Bulldogs done anything different? Yeah, because it wasn't. Bontempelli kicked that goal to go 19 points up, and it looked like he was going to win the Norm Smith. He was going to be the hero and all this sort of thing. The greatest player of all time. Then there was a period of about 3 or 4 minutes after that goal where there was no goal kick.
Yep.
And it was sort of in this holding pattern a bit, the game. Like the Dogs couldn't go again. They had a couple of chances maybe, but there was just in this holding pattern. Then when Melbourne got the goal, it was sort of, you know, Viney did well at a stoppage and all that sort of thing.
It was unbelievable.
That was stoppage. The key to the whole thing, I reckon. That turned the whole thing.
Yep. Yeah. And then Harms got the ball, kicked it beautifully to Fritch, and he kicked the goal. But in the lead up to that, you didn't necessarily sense that Melbourne was coming.
Yeah.
And then as soon as that first goal was kicked, then they kicked another one straight away. Then Petrarca kicked the third one, which was the dribble goal. And then, you know, they were on this incredible run. But just that, it was just really interesting because it was 9 minutes left in the third quarter when Fritch kicked that goal. Mm. And then they kicked 16 goals from 9 minutes left in the third quarter until the end of the match.
We will speak
16.
We'll speak with Max Gorn at some stage this week, I'm sure. Now, Max is probably in a nightclub still on somebody's shoulders, which is just simply amazing. Good on him.
Good
on him enjoying it, living it up. And yeah, that's great. A little bit slippery. That's why it was on the shoulders, I think, just in case he slipped over and
dance floor. OHS got him up.
Yeah.
Fix it up, fella.
But for him to say, he was on the bench, and to say to Simon Goodwin, I think Luke Jackson's hot here. Let's keep him on the ground. A lot of other players would go, no, I want back out there.
Yeah.
But he recognised the moment, recognised the situation. Jackson was phenomenal in that little period.
But he said that a bit, Max, hasn't he, Half, through the year, where he'd talk about sensing when Luke Jackson was going really well, whether it be a matchup situation or whatever, where he'd make the move on the field himself and he'd go and push forward or have an extra rest or whatever, because he'd sense when he felt Jackson would go better than him, because they're obviously very different ruckmen. And that proved to be the case again in a grand final.
It was a great combo. The 1-2 punch of Max and Luke for the days through the afternoon. Lots to talk about, discuss from that. But just get back to that point for a second, Ramo, about what happened in the 16:34 minute mark of the third term when Bailey Fridge kicked the goal. And the fact that it was 100-7 from there. Now, the game opened up. The Bulldogs' spirit had been broken. Their backs had been broken. So take it for what it is a bit. But 100 points in a quarter and a half is effectively what we saw. Yeah. Like, it's out of this world.
In a final, that's basically only happened, I think, 5 or 6 times where a team's been able to kick 100 points in a half of football.
Well, you've got to go back, really, to Essendon back in 84 and 85 when they did that in last quarters, where there's that
11 goals and 9 goals.
Yeah, but yeah,
not in a, that's never been done in a grand final.
No, but particularly in modern times where scoring's not as easy as
45 minutes. They've kicked 100 points.
I don't know.
Those three goals, I think there was a minute and whatever 20 seconds remaining in that third quarter, and those three goals all came out of centre bounce.
Yeah,
it's like, how?
And then they got 2 goals on the other side of half time.
How do you allow that in such quick succession?
Yeah.
It was...
You could see at one point Bontempelli looking up on the scoreboard to see the replay to work out what they were doing wrong.
They needed to go the double sweeper roll. That's what they needed to do in the end half.
They just needed to hold, and then they just needed to own the outside. That's what they needed to do. They just kept getting sucked into the footy, and the D's are out the back. But the role of Jackson, going back to that point before, the role of Jackson in that situation was phenomenal, because he was the one almost getting on the out as the outlet.
His athleticism was amazing.
He was really important.
Well, we thought that was going to be a big plus to their game, that the ruck battle between, you know, Gorn, Jackson, English and Steph Martin, and it proved correct in the end.
Did off Twitter from Josh Kay, who's the stats man at Channel 7 these days, talking about 100 points and a half. 8 times in 682 VFL AFL finals, a team has scored 100 points and a half. Only once previously has it happened in the grand final in 72. Yes, Carlton kicked 18-6 in the 72 grand final in the first half. And then they kicked 112 points in a qualifying final in the second half. Collingwood have done it once. Essendon have done it twice in that 2000 qualifying final. Ramo, you did it.
Yeah.
Kicked 102 points in a qualifying final in 2000, the second half. Who'd you play in that final?
Boomer.
North.
Yeah.
Garbage. North Melbourne. Garbage, yeah, Boomer.
I think we nearly clocked up 200 points that day.
Did you?
Yeah.
Geelong did it 92. Melbourne did it, obviously, on the weekend. And St Kilda did it 73 in elimination final. Just 100-point halves in footy.
But a lot of those were whackings. The difference was here that the Bulldogs led by 19 points and had control of the game. So that's what makes that even more remarkable.
Yeah.
Like, they couldn't score through the what was it, from the early part of the second quarter to the mid part of the third.
Isn't it amazing? So 5 goals, 9 in the first half, Melbourne kicked. They left a few out there.
Yeah, they did.
And they go 7 goals, 2, and they go 9 goals, 3. Accuracy. It's an amazing thing.
When you're feeling it, you're feeling it. It is a funny thing. It's a funny game, footy, they keep telling us. And, well, it's not funny for the Dogs fans at the moment, or the Dogs players, I'm sure, because they'll be left lamenting what might have been. Because, as you say, Waddy, 19 points up, the Bont's hot, and then he goes off the ground. And then it all starts to turn.
We'll ask Jimmy this later, but I'll ask you guys. Do you think the Bulldogs were 1 goal away from breaking that game, or do you think that...
Jeez, I reckon they might have been close.
Because, I mean, obviously Melbourne's gone to kick 16, so you can say, no, that they weren't. But do you reckon that they were on the edge, that there was a tipping point or not?
Wow. Yeah.
Well, the Bont was having maximum impact.
Yeah.
You know, possession, goals, he was just... everything was maximum for him. So you felt momentum. But then you, like you said, there was that little 3-minute period. It was a lull in the game, and whoever wrestled that, you know, and the result now is what it is. But there's, you know, there's a couple of moments in there. Jack Viney around stoppage was just starting to charge through, and You're looking then for your leaders to do something, to stand up, to work. And it all went.
But they were trying a few things different, where they're all setting up defensive side of the stoppage and trying to push through that. Because, again, they were behind, so they had to try something different. But for a period, it wasn't really working. And then it absolutely worked. But it was just interesting whether you thought that if they were one more goal, the Dogs, whether it looked over for Melbourne. Because they looked rattled. They looked, you know, there was a few things going on, like, you know, the Max Gorn, Caleb Daniel situation, you know, that. That was at that time when the Dogs led by 19 points.
I don't think there'd be too many. Now, I've spoke to a lot of players through the journey, sort of online and offline, Ramo, and Whitey, and all, you know that. I don't think there'd be too many people or players that have been great competitors against the Dogs in the last couple of years would be too distressed about the result. Because they're a bit chirpy, they're a bit lippy, the Dogs. Mm. And they've got a bit to say when they're out there on the ground. So they make a bit of a rod for their back to a degree as well. So I'm sure there's plenty of players out there at the moment that are pretty happy with the result. They would like their teams to be there more often than not, but they'd be pretty happy with the result.
Yeah, and it's simple. You know, talk the talk, you've got to walk the walk.
That's right.
It's simple. And, you know, there's a couple of moments where I think guys will, when they re-watch the game, be like, oh, geez, I fumbled there. Oh, I missed that tackle. And, you know, they're moments where how you have to... when you have to stop momentum. You've got to get every single thing right. So I think the coaches too, in the coaches' box, will look at that period of time and go, geez, what could have we done different? Or did it all just happen so quick? We've applauded Luke Beveridge throughout this whole final series around tactically what he was able to do to change games, to change momentum. And he simply couldn't do it this time around.
Is that because it just happened too quickly?
Well, it happened from centre bounce. It's near impossible to do something different from centre bounce. You can move, you can change things when the ball's in general play, but if you're scoring from centre bounce, it's all one-on-one stuff, really.
Well, the only thing you can do is reset it at the contest and have some experience and some leadership at the contest. Say, you know what, we've seen it a couple of times, they've been going through the front or out too easily. We just got to hold a bit here and cause a neutral. Get a neutral rather than having to try and win it.
Correct.
Let's get a neutral, get another secondary ball up and then go again.
So I think in that 100 points, I think 44 of those points were from centre bounce.
Yeah.
Nearly half. It's a big number. Yeah.
Christian Petrarca was on the Channel 9 footy show yesterday, and he said that the instruction had come out to go slow in the lead up to three-quarter time, and they didn't.
Nah.
They just felt it, and they just kept going. And a lot of it was because the ball goes up in the middle, they get the centre clearance, and they just go.
Yeah.
And it just... Do it again.
Well, that's the time you can. You don't have to go slow at a centre bounce because you can try and win it.
But that was what the instruction come from the bench.
The reality is, through that period, the Ds absolutely went after the Dogs' greatest strength, which is their midfield. And they were able to win.
James, good morning to you.
I feel like I'm doing a power ballad with the fist, the real, you know, Shannon Knoll, the what about me? Oh, I'm inspired.
You sound inspired.
Yeah, I am. Yeah. How good's footy?
Well, it depends who you ask at this moment.
Oh, well, the look of the game, that famous discussion we have about round 6 or 7 when we don't have anything to talk about in the industry, and we have a side that kicks 18 goals in about 10 minutes.
Yeah, well, your mate Steve, was sitting back, we touched on this before, that the 666 just caused havoc for the poor old Dogs on the weekend and created unbelievable momentum for the Ds.
Yeah, it was fantastic. And are we getting straight into it, what we saw about the game?
Yeah, go on.
How it changed? Very simplistically, once they started to hit the ball forward and surge the ball forward, they put the Bulldogs on the back foot. And it came from that first stoppage, half-forward flank for the Ds, which James Harms made his way through the contest and found Bailey Fritch. And then we went back to the centre bounce. And Gorn and Luke Jackson, in particular, with his centre bounce work, that by hitting the ball forward, it's almost the old Lee Matthews of the Lions when they used to just hit the ball forward. When they started to do that, the worst-case scenario then for Melbourne was, at least then you're forcing the Dogs a quick possession, which then brings May and your half-back line back into play. Now, the Dogs got on top because they were actually able to burst out of the stoppage and they changed their personnel in the midfield mix, Adam Treloar in particular. So they got forward really hard, and they actually opened Melbourne up, their midfielders in transition. Now, when Melbourne were able to hit the ball forward, out of centre bounce, pulled the forwards back, you shorten the whole entire back line for the Bulldogs. By that meaning, all your starting positions become really bad positions pretty quickly. So Easton Wood, who's trying to play in front of Bailey Fritsch to stop him leading up, Melbourne surge out the front, they take 5 or 10 metres, and you go, I'm in no man's land here pretty quickly. So the ability to actually hit the ball forward and surge forward, I know it sounds like a really simple idea, but it absolutely was destructive for the Ds.
So let's go back. I couldn't agree more with that summary of how the game changed, Jim. But let's go back to the start of the game where if quarter time is 4-5 to the Ds to the Dogs 1-2. What were you thinking at quarter time? Because it looked, for all intents and purposes, as Melbourne had full control of that contest in that first quarter.
Yeah, you thought, oh, the Dogs are gone here. Like, because Melbourne had the game on its terms, had the tempo right. Their half-back line, he's now probably, well, he's in my top 10. You know how much I love young Jake Bowley. Half. I love players who, young players who use their direct opponent as a starting position. They beat them first, and then they go win the footy. And he makes smart decision and uses the ball well. What's not to like?
Well, he's had a good start. So did Christian Salem. So both of those two guys had pretty important starts to the contest.
And Lever. So your half-back line, Lever, Salem, and Bowie had, I think it was like 9, 8, and 7 touches in the first quarter, around about that. So they got absolutely what they wanted as a backline group, which then allows everything to come off the back of it. Oliver's gets attacking through the midfield, as Basil Zemplis calls him, Petrarca, when he really tried to drag it out when he gave him the Norm Smith medal. He was just they were allowed to go about their business. Like, you could get really aggressive, you could get really attacking at the stoppages. So the game was completely on Melbourne's terms. So for the Bulldogs to turn it around, like, you have to admire the way the Bulldogs were able to flip it on its head after quarter time.
The Bulldogs were fighting against the game in the first quarter.
What do you remember saying that?
Well, they had to, every possession they got, every time they got the ball, they were pressured. They were fighting the game. So for them just to hang in there in the first quarter, Caleb Daniel was exceptional in that first quarter and the second quarter. He had 26 possessions at halftime. He was exceptional. But it looked like that first quarter particularly, Melbourne probably left a couple out there, really. Their lead could have been extended a little bit further. It's just, it was all on Melbourne's terms. And then to flip it the way they did in that second quarter, the Dogs was excellent.
Because I think that's a good point, is that they didn't get reward on the scoreboard for their dominance. And often it happens in finals or in sport in general. If you don't take the opportunities when you've got control, when you lose control, you can often
regret that. Nine scoring shots to three in the first quarter.
Because it felt like the margin was much more significant at quarter time, Jimmy, than what it was.
Yeah, I think it was 18 or 19 inside forward 50s. And they were deep and dangerous, where the Dogs still had a lot themselves, but they're all shallow.
Yeah.
And that's why I was like sort of highlighting the half-back line of Melbourne. Like, a lot of the Dogs' entries were 45, just breaking inside forward 50. But I think this was always going to be the battle, and I wrote down, you know, different keys or the way I'd seen sides play well against Melbourne was actually what the Bulldogs could do. And I go back, and I have to use the Giants game for example, early in the year, was when the Giants played Lachie Whitfield up at the stoppage. Now, Melbourne like to keep their back six intact because they're so good defensively from stoppage and from turnover. And Melbourne, that's why their stoppage numbers, you think, geez, that'd absolutely blow people away. Melbourne don't have to win it. Like, they don't panic because they know they're really well set up behind the ball. Now, what the Giants did well against Melbourne is they won scores from stoppages by 19 points and won the game, was Whitfield was dangerous from the stoppage. So, which made them, Melbourne ask a few, they asked questions of Melbourne going, well, that half, Whitfield would start a half forward and he come up the stoppage. They made Melbourne make the decision, does Salem or one of these halfbacks like Rivers or anything like that come up, and we lose our structure behind the ball. Now, the Dogs in the second quarter, and even for the first part of the third quarter, Bailey Smith got a lot of the footy, and, you know, through the middle of the ground. So he came up, and he was actually part of taking that territory off Melbourne. And then Lachie Hunter got involved. It was almost like Lachie Hunter kicked two crosses, soccer style, from the half-forward flank into the top of the goal square, and that's where Treloar coming down through the middle of the ground. So they're actually, that high half forward started to have an impact. And this is why when Melbourne started to hit the ball forward, you actually take away that high half forward because he's on the wrong side of the stoppage. Does that make sense how I'm explaining it? So yep. Bulldogs are really good because Melbourne were trying to hit back and sideways and all that, which brings that high half forward into play. He can get on his bike. Bulldogs start to take territory. Treloar is bursting out the front of the stoppage. You do it that way. Melbourne then starts hitting the ball forward and has that surge mentality, and you leave those Bulldogs players on the wrong side of the contest.
So was there anything you would have done just to the very start of the game? Was there anything that you would have tried or a matchup you would have put in that you didn't see in the start of the game? Rama, what would you have done if you were Simon Goodwin or Luke Beveridge in terms of trying to get the game on terms early?
Well, so Petrarca had 10 in the first quarter. Oliver had 13 in the first quarter. Josh Dunkley had 12 in the first quarter. Josh Dunkley had to go to one of them. You got to take something away from opposition really quickly in games like that. And Luke Beveridge chose not to, really. He allowed Petrarca and Oliver to do their thing.
Well, we talked about it on Friday as to what they would do. And the question mark was whether Dunkley would go to Oliver and whether Harms would go to Liberatore.
Yep.
Now, neither of that really happened. It was Viney and Liberatore, which we kind of forecast might have probably happened. But
Viney had 12 clearances in the end and was, I thought, had a super game.
Yeah, but it sort of panned out the way we thought it would pan out because it panned out like that previously. But in a grand final, Jimmy, do you try and take away the maximum impact players?
Yeah, I mean this with absolute total respect. Josh Dunkley, I think, is a fantastic footballer. No wonder other clubs want him. He's a contested beast and he wins it. But I don't want him kicking the footy through the middle of the ground. I want him getting the ball to people who are really good ball users, and they got plenty of them. So it's almost reiterating Rammer's thoughts here is, I want him around the ball, but I want him around the ball taking Oliver or Petrarca as a starting point and making their possessions, a lot more scrappier than what they are. So, have Dunkley around the ball. And if he's getting 12 touches, it might be that short handball or he's releasing someone or he's won a free kick back. But I don't want him having a dozen possessions where he's the ball user coming up through the middle of the ground, which he turned a couple over. Like, that happens. Like, everyone makes mistakes. But it's more like the role that he was cast in as the midfielder. I don't want to put words in your mouth, Raymond, but I think we're sort of saying the same thing. It was okay having him around the ball, but I would have rather him have 8 touches. But then if he's on Oliver or Petrarca, has 7 or 8 instead of having a dozen and having scoreboard impact.
See, Oliver, Petrarca and Viney were allowed to dictate starting position all night around contest. So the Bulldogs, in the end, and we'll get to the second half shortly, but so the Bulldogs, they were lulled into a sort of a false sense of security because at that point in the game, in the third quarter, they were winning contested possessions, they were winning clearances.
Yep.
So it's like, we're probably going okay here. But if you looked at the raw stats of the game, those mids for Melbourne were dominating the game. They were well on top in that game.
You go back to when the Dogs lost that last 3 games of the year. What do we keep saying while they're getting beaten? It was actually paying the opposition its due respects in the midfield. So, that highlight that we mentioned when they played the Hawks down in Tassie, Wingard walks down to a forward stoppage. Everyone goes, you take him, you take him. I'll just try and win the ball. It was a bit of that going on in the first quarter. And I'll ask you 3 gentlemen the question is, if you're going head-to-head, Dunkley versus, or we'll pick one of them, Petrarca, and they both have a dozen, whose dozen do you reckon is going to have more impact on the game? Mm-hmm.
Yes, Christian. Christian will have more impact.
Yeah, and he's an impactful player, but this is what I'm saying. If, and it's not just singling out Dunkley, I'm saying as a Bulldogs midfield as a whole, so like let's just not just make it a Dunkley issue, but a Bulldogs midfield as a whole, if you said to him, I don't need you to have a dozen, but you have 7 or 8, which is still quite a bit of the ball, but Oliver or Petrarca have 7 or 8, the impact that it will have on Melbourne compared, and it will have a better impact on us.
Having said all that, I mean, second quarter we see the Dogs, as you said before, Jim, they find a way to turn the game around. They go in with a lead of, 8 points or so at half time. So they kicked six goals in the second term. They got Adam Treloar started it with his back into the midfield role, centre bounce stuff, pushing forward, as you said. And they seem to have they took away well the ball from the Demons. The Demons couldn't get their hands on the ball in that second term. They had no possession, and I wonder why they couldn't score. So they were getting their hands on the footy. They're able to create the chains. They're able to use find the free players. They controlled the tempo of the quarter a bit better too, I reckon, rather than that first quarter.
Yep.
And they go in 8 points up. So they and then they kicked the first goal. Was it the first goal out of the third quarter that they kick? I think they did.
Yep.
They did kick the first goal in the third quarter.
First two, I think. Cause...
And then Bond kicks that one late or midway through to make it 19 points. So they were able to get it back on terms. They would have been feeling good about that, no doubt. So they would have gone into halftime thinking, you know, okay, we've settled now. Ramo's in the group message talking about the game settled and the Bulldogs had found their mojo and found their rhythm of the game a bit. So at halftime, I reckon, despite the fact they'd given up those possessions and the opportunity to those key Demons midfielders in the first quarter, they'd had the game on their terms. They were going, okay, boys, we just kept rolling with how we go from here.
Yeah.
We can control this game.
Yeah, and they did. They controlled it effectively for the next 12 minutes of that third quarter. So Bond kicks that snapshot and they go 19 points up. So you're feeling pretty good about yourself. You really are. So
does it go back to the simple fact, guys, that, and this was said in the build-up to the game, Melbourne's best is the best. Yeah. And if they play to their level, they win. The question is whether they could actually play that level in a high-stakes grand final.
So,
and that was kind of how the game panned out in a way. When they played at their best, they're unstoppable.
Yeah, I felt it was individuals for the Dogs lifted and were playing brilliantly, but Melbourne's was a system thing.
Yes.
So Melbourne adjusted some things system-wise, you know, or tactically, if you want to put it in that terms. Whereas I felt when the Bulldogs were flying, it was Daniel, Bont, Treloar, Smith, and maybe one or two other, but like four or five players just went up a level.
Mm. Wasn't the entire Melbourne, team.
Yeah, where Melbourne was, okay, we start surging the ball forward, we hit forward, we make some adjustments at stoppage, and it just completely, game just twisted back around again.
Well, that's certainly what seemed to happen, no doubt from that point of time onwards.
It's funny, just on that, What the Dogs did in the second quarter, they moved the game from spot to spot.
Yes.
It wasn't a free flow.
Which we talked about Friday. Free flow was going to play into the hands of the Demons. They needed to march up the field with some tempo, with controlled tempo. Because then you get a chance to roll off. If you're Melbourne, you get to roll off into the good spots, and then you get your attack from there with your wingers pushing from the open side back to help.
Mm.
So then you get your extra number and you're away. But because they marched up in their own good time, they had numbers representative forward of the footy and created some matchups one-on-one and defenders had to defend, which gave them a chance to bring the ball to ground.
The matchup nightmare was Bontempelli when he was drifting forward. Like Melbourne just didn't have a matchup for him. They couldn't work out who to play on him. He's kicked two in that second quarter, had 10 possessions. So he was
from
really,
marks.
Yeah, he was really dominant. So that was working. That was because Bont was playing forward centre, and Jim spoke about this. He would go up to the contest, so nobody would sort of be with him. Then he'd drift back, and it's like, well, who's playing on him? And it's similar to what the Giants did to Melbourne at the MCG that Jim spoke about a lot with how they used Lachie Whitfield and Tom Green. Was it Tom Green that day?
Yeah, Tom Green.
And it was like, well, okay, whose man is this when he's drifting back forward?
Because that was he took those two really good marks, but if Johannesson hadn't taken the mark, Bontempelli could have easily taken that one as well, which would have been
three
inside 50 marks, which would have resulted in three goals.
Yeah, so that was what Melbourne had to work out, and they couldn't. So halftime probably came at the right time for the Deeth, if you think about it, because they were on the march. The Dogs, what they kicked? They kicked six goals, three in that second quarter, and looked strong.
So at halftime, Jimmy, did you think that Melbourne was in trouble, or did you think that, and again, it didn't change obviously until the second half of the third quarter, but did you think Melbourne were in trouble, or did you always think that they would get it back?
I don't think we ever saw that coming. But
no, I don't think anyone.
I think as Ram had touched on, it came at a good time, and I think Melbourne earned enough credits from me about their maturity throughout the year that they don't panic. and the fact that throughout the entire year that they're so well balanced attacking and defensively. The thing is, like, they don't solely rely on one particular way to defend you. Like I mentioned, they can defend you from stoppage, but they can score from turnover with defending. So I had confidence that, all right, we're sort of almost we're now just playing a grand final over two quarters now. Like instead of becoming a 50-over game, okay, we're playing 20-20 now. Like the game just became shorter and errors will be punished higher. But I felt like, all right, we're restarting now again. Like, both of you had a turn almost running downhill with the wind.
Yep.
Let's have a go. Like it just felt like now we've just got a more condensed grand final again.
This is pretty special. I'm a big history nut. I love this footy club and I love what I've been drafted into. And obviously 11 years of misery. 57 years of misery for the people that have been here for a while. To be able to do this on tonight, unfortunately not in front of Melbourne, but they adopted Perth crowd, it's pretty special. It's really going to take a while to soak in, but I can feel that we've done something here.
That was a tall reporter getting a microphone onto the shoulders of whoever Max Gorn was on in the nightclub post grand final in his kit, boots on still. Yeah. Celebrating, probably mid-champagne as well, Big Maxi, the captain of the Dees, who we are going to catch up with, I think, tomorrow. Is that right, Frank? Looking forward to trying to organise
that. Pending Max's commitments.
Pending, yes, state of play. Yeah.
Subject to availability.
I think pending Max's state is full stop.
I think he'll be fine. Which is good news, but we'll get to Max. We'll hear from him. We'll hear more from him heaps, I reckon, in the next couple of weeks.
Where were those Melbourne players? Do we know what establishment they were at?
Yeah, I read that today.
I still remember where we went after our grand final. Heat Discotheque and Nightclub.
Heat Discotheque and Nightclub. Where'd you go, Jim?
Which time? Back to Geelong. We went back to Geelong for the friendly riot that was going down there. Yeah, no, Lyric was done and dusted. It should have been done and dusted with what's gone on the Lyric over the years. There was some function centre. Then back to the footy club one year, sort of just one of the function rooms. And then, I don't know. Can't remember.
By the way, some feedback coming through.
Adam, they just become the same after a while.
Well, that's right. They just blend into one another, don't they? Adam Tomlinson was the man holding Max up, so his ACL is fine.
Yeah.
That's his final fitness test.
Yeah, it was his rehab.
Part of his rehab, just
strengthen. A couple of squats.
A few squats with Big Maxi on. Let's get to the second half, Jim. We touched on it before. It was the most ridiculous thing I think I've seen in all my time in 40, 100 points to 7 in the last 45 minutes of the game. But the Bont kicks that one midway through and they go 19 points up. Further to Whitey's question before about did you think the Dees could hold up? When it gets to 19, Bont's hot to trot and he's kicked his third. I'm thinking, oh boy, this is going to take something. What I didn't see coming was centre bounce dominance. And what I didn't see coming at the time, and you touched on it before, Jim, was that left half forward stoppage, where Jack Viney charges through the contest, breaks it up, ends up in the hands of James Harms.
He just made contact.
Yeah. Ends up in the hands of James Harms, and he hits Bailey Fritsch in the right forward pocket. And that, I think, my personal opinion is that was the turning point for the whole thing, because that was enabled the goal to go through clearly, but then it gets back to centre bounce and the domination starts.
Yeah, 16-4 to one goal, one after the 16-minute mark of the third quarter.
That's unusual, Jim.
that's insane. The composure from James Harms shouldn't be underestimated. Like, I know Viney was fantastic, but your team is under the pump. Like, Bont is going crazy, but you're blasting through and you're about 55 out. How many players do you reckon in that moment just would have gone, I'm just going to kick this as hard as I can and try and think I'm going to kick a goal, and it gets touched and rushed through, and then the Dogs will probably just chip it around and take a little bit of pressure. But then he just sees Bridge out into the far pocket and hits him with a beautiful kick. Like, the composure from Harms in that moment was absolutely first class. So, yeah, that was, I think, the changing moment. But you wonder whether the message did come from the bench, let's start hitting it forward, or the fact is, geez, we had a bit of success with that. Let's go back to the centre bounce. Let's just try and keep it really simple. Let's just pair it all back. Let's try and hit the ball forward. The way the Dogs set up their centre bounce stoppages can open, they can open themselves up, because the two sort of guys who are in charge of guarding the back of the circle keep coming so far up because they go to their direct opponent going, well, we own that piece of pie. But the thing is, when you do play that way, unless you've got someone coming off the back of the square to give you that handball to then point you that way, the only things you can really do is jam it on your boot anyway.
Mm.
So you wonder if Melbourne identified that, going, next time we have centre bounces, worst case scenario, we're going to force a quick kick. Best case is what they kept doing. We just keep surging onto it.
Yeah, but you come out the front door and you take territory as well.
Yeah.
So the ball's going so deep inside your forward 50. Like the clearance out the front jammed on your boot is manageable because it probably gets to, you know, 40, 45 metres out from goal. So you can defend that. But once that clearance goes deep inside your forward 50, it becomes very, very tricky.
We often look for a trend or something that happens in a big game, in a grand final, to say, okay, this is where the game will now move next. Seeing what we saw from Melbourne, do we see a game, do other clubs see what Melbourne did in regards to trying to score heavily, that might happen more often or more, or is this just a once in a lifetime type of situation?
No. Well, Melbourne just did what Richmond, they have been doing what Richmond's been braining sides for the last 4 years. Scores off forward half turnovers. That's been the huge improvement from Melbourne from last two years to this year, is they've become the number one or number two side at scoring from turnover, especially in the front half. The fact that, Harf, you might have the stats in front of you, Christian Salem had, I think, 7 or 8 inside forward 50s. Like, he's playing half back, but he played half back pretty much 70 metres out from his own goal for 3 quarters of the night. So what they've been able to do, but yeah, 7 inside forward 50s, I think he had.
Stand by. He did. He had 7 inside 50s, you're right.
Yep, 7.
And then he was 11. Taking the... Yeah, and then he was just having a bit of fun in the last 5 minutes. I'm going to go inside forward 50 and try and kick a goal myself. But I'm definitely getting involved. But they've taken what is the big trend in the game and done it really well. But also, like I said, they've got good balance. Like, they can score that way, but then they can score by just being well set behind the ball. So I think they're just doing what today's footy is and just doing it really well.
So 24 points up at three-quarter time. They kick the first goal quick and it's over. It's curtains. Peter in Port Melbourne raises a point which was discussed through the weekend. I'd love to get your take on it, gentlemen. Boys, do you think the breaks in between games Melbourne had and all the travelling the Doggies did around Australia just all of a sudden kicked in?
No.
That was the question. Or I'll add my kicker to it. Or did they just break their heart?
No, I don't think the break mattered in the end. I think the Dogs actually wanted to play the game straight away rather than have the week off, because they had momentum.
Yeah.
That's my opinion. They were just riding the wave. Then the week off, Whitey, you're sitting around for a couple of weeks and you're thinking about the game. So there's no excuse from a preparation point of view for the Dogs. But in my opinion, they would have wanted to play the game last week rather than on the weekend.
Yeah, well, and I think a couple of days ago, people were talking about how that was going to favour the Dogs because Melbourne hadn't played any footy. And then because Melbourne pants them in the last quarter and after, it's like, whoa, that favoured the Ds. I think whatever the result was going to be, we'd just write the narrative to suit it, wouldn't we?
Yeah, I think so. I think the break had to help the Bulldogs, considering the amount of travel they'd had and that they'd played more matches, but I don't think it necessarily advantaged or disadvantaged anyone in the end.
No, I think what Peter's asking off the SMS is that when a game broke open, like it was, they looked like they couldn't run. They did. It did look like they just stopped.
But it seemed...
That's grand finals, though. That's elimination finals full stop. Like, not just grand finals, but any final where you're going to be eliminated. Once the side gets five goals up, they know, they just go, geez, get me off. The opposition goes, can I just get off the ground?
So they broke their hearts.
But it seemed that the change happened so quickly that they didn't have enough time to adjust. Like, the goals... Well,
they did have time to adjust, but they chose not to.
Yeah, but it just kept going back to the middle and they get another goal.
Well, Whitey, plus 44 from centre bounce. Okay.
That was from the 15-minute mark from the third quarter to the end of the game.
How many times does the ball need to come back to the centre before you start to change what you're doing in there?
I understand that.
They had 16 cracks at it.
No, I understand that. But what I mean is that it was almost like it felt, because the Melbourne players have talked about this as well, but it was like, we'll get to three-quarter time. We'll slow the game down. They just kept scoring goals. It was almost like the Bulldogs wanted to get to three-quarter time to that. Right, what's going on here? Let's fix it. By the time they got to three-quarter time, the game was almost gone. Well, in fact, it probably was gone.
It was 24 points.
I love when you get into coach Rammer mode. Come back to the middle. Will you fix it?
Well, I reckon Jackson McRae was on the bench for a lot of that right in the last part of that quarter when they got those three goals within about a minute of actual playing time. He's sitting on the bench.
A setback for some same-game multipliers out there.
A setback? What's setback times 10?
I thought you might have mentioned Jackson this morning.
Oh, it's Petrarca! Christian Petrarca!
Christian Petrarca!
We won a premiership. That's what matters the most. I mean, the Normson medal is a reflection of this group. I just get to go out and play my role and have fun with what I do. And there's guys behind the scenes who sort of do the dirty work for me a little bit. And Tom Sparrow and James Harms. What an amazing game. It's just, so special.
What an amazing game. Well, when you put on a clinic in a grand final, you're entitled to say that. Christian Petrarca there after his Anzac Day Eve medal at the MCG when he got, oh, it's Petrarca! And then Basil getting involved with his shenanigans on Saturday night. 39 disposals for Christian, 24 contested, 4 tackles. How many inside? 11 inside 50s for Christian, 9 clearances, 2 goals, 1. It was utter domination from start to finish, Whitey.
So, Jimmy, before you talk about one of the best games of all time, not only those numbers, but it was career-high disposals, career-high contested possessions, career-high metres gained, equal career-high inside 50s, equal career-high score involvements, which was 15, in a grand final, in your first ever grand final.
Yeah, not bad, eh? it was about 24 contested, which is enormous, but did we get to the bottom of the mystery stat?
Yeah.
Yeah, because he had 40 at one stage.
They gave a handball, but when they went back and looked at it, it was a fumble.
Ah, disgrace.
Yeah. Such a clear fumble. They can become setbacks at times when they have that video review, which sort of is about 15 minutes
long. Oh, no, you didn't have him for 40 as well,
No,
did you?
I didn't. But Jackson needed... The video couldn't find 5 more for Jackson McRae. It was interesting with Christian Petrarca, Jimmy, just before the game. This is a guy that, big personality, he's had an amazing year, and all attention was going to be, could he do it in a big game? And about 15 minutes before the game, you saw the players sort of milling around in the rooms. He's laughing, joking with his teammates. He looked really relaxed. You kind of thought, I reckon he's going to have a big one here. He's made for that moment. We kind of knew it, but you had to see it first.
Yeah, he's got the right amount of confidence, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And I think that's been the big shift in the last 3 years, if you will, because he's been dominant the last sort of 2.5, 3 years. We've spoken about this. When a player actually understands their full capability, so, Dustin Martin, always a very good player, but he elevated himself when he just knows, if I take this position on my direct opponent inside forward 50, I'm going to win it. Or if I pick up the ball, no one's putting me to ground, so I might as well just keep taking tacklers on. And Petrarca, once he understood, I'm powerful, I'm the most powerful, explosive bloke at this contest, and no one's going to put me to the ground. So you take the ball, and the very worst case scenario, if someone's just hanging on to his jumper, he's going to handball the ball off anyway to another quality midfielder. So when you play with that feeling of almost you're a little bit invincible, you start to do things like, well, I'm just going to wheel around on the man of the mark because I've got this covered. You have confidence and you have authority with whatever you do, and that's the way you play. So, there was a play, I think, on the half-forward flank, interchange side, Melbourne are kicking right of screen. Picks up clean, steps, just turns around, and he pumps the ball back inside forward 50. Now, I reckon in his first three years, he's probably just giving off a short little handball. But he's like, well, no, I might as well just stand up. and I'll turn around, and what's the worst they're going to do to me? Just hold on to my jumper for dear life? Like, when players get that, you know, that sense of, you know, power, they do rise in big moments, because they go, well, I've got the goods. I've got the quality to deliver here. And I think all his finals, you go through his finals, he's put up consistently good finals.
It'll be interesting, guys. I hope that he tells the story in the aftermath of the change in him, because it happened at the start of last season when he had that massive preseason.
Got fit.
I was just about to say. So, but the thing was, he knew he was coming out of contract. Yeah. So he wanted a big contract, whether it be a Melbourne or somewhere else, because there was talk that maybe he needed to go somewhere else. So he got himself incredibly fit. And before the first game of the home and away season, he'd recontracted at Melbourne. Mm. So it was a dramatic recommitment to his football to go to these new levels. And I think his girlfriend had a fair bit to do with it as well, just about saying, Christian, you got one crack at this. Yeah. And, you know, less than 24 months later, we're talking about him arguably being the best player in the game.
Petrarca would have been a good player. He would have, you know, he would have played half forward, would have probably kicked 30 or 40 goals in a year as playing as a half forward. But he potentially would never have challenged himself. Then he goes and challenges himself to get super fit, so he's able to play as a full-time midfielder. So he goes and plays as a full-time midfielder, able to average close to 30 possessions and a goal and a bit of game. Is that worth more than playing as just a half-forward flanker and maybe going into the middle of the ground 25% of the time? Absolutely it is. And Jim talks about that power. They're rare commodities. They're very, very rare commodities in the game to be able to stand up in tackles, power through, and still be able to deliver the ball. If clubs have got one, that's why they're worth so much more than most other midfielders.
He is, he's something else. He's different gravy. I don't think I've come across too many, Jim, that can, like, power through is, and not be easily tackled is one thing, but being able to do something coming out of that.
Correct.
And be so creative coming out of that more often is what I think separates him. Like, he's phenomenal. You can't tackle him, but even if you get a look at him and stop his momentum, he's going to make a good decision and make with a skill disposal and bring one of his teammates into the game creatively. And I think that is a massive thing that most players can't do.
Yeah, it's all come together, hasn't it? We've almost attracted the same speed. I think his decision-making's improved. He's got some serious punch on his kicking now, that comes with fitness. But also, remember, he had the ACL as well. Yep. So, you start to get confidence and power back in your legs. Like, the penetration and the power of his kicking, like, you can't close that down as a defensive group. Because, like, if he's coming at you, you're going, geez, like, you just hope he misses the target, really, or he gives you some little chance, because the speed that the ball comes in, he only needs to hit to advantage side of these Melbourne players.
There's got to be coming a moment for clubs, for teams now, where you just simply can't continue to allow these midfielders to do what they want in games. And I'm not just talking about Melbourne, I'm talking about all teams now. It's very rare that you see players go and try to shut down another player and completely take him out of the game. It's got to change.
But is he a different player because of how he plays, as in the way he goes forward?
But he's playing so much more midfield now. He's not playing minutes going deep forward. Like, he might do it for maybe 10, 15 minutes a game. But other than that, he's playing as a pure midfielder.
The only one issue about that, Rama, is, like, I completely agree, like, sides can do a bit more. They can start a bit closer at stoppages, and we've spoken about that. But the hard tagger, like the player who's picked week in, week out to be the hard tagger, they're so difficult to find, because these players now, like, we all stand next to the Bont when he comes into, you know, RSN. He's enormous. Like, he's 6'3". He feels like he's 6'5". When you get next to him, you go, geez, you're big. Yeah, Petrarca's enormous. Dustin Martin's enormous. So the point I'm making is, one, they're just physically huge. They're athletically insane. Like, we just talked about Petrarca, their power and their ability, their motors, their repeat efforts. That once you sort of got a person with those sort of traits, they end up being your ball winner anyway.
Jim.
So, like, that's what I'm saying. So if you've got those athletic capabilities and you've got some smarts about you, you're not then cast as a tagger.
Your team, Jim, was one of the most successful of the modern era. Would have your team been as successful without what Cameron Ling was able to do for you guys week in, week out?
No, definitely not.
They're hard to find. That's why when you find those type of players that can do that, they are worth their weight in gold.
But Richmond haven't had one of those players in the last little while. Hawthorn didn't have one of those players. So different systems.
Liam Shields?
He wasn't doing Cameron Ling stuff week in, week out.
I think every team's got one secretly that's able to do it.
Yeah, but we were also fortunate enough that we batted about 10 deep in our midfield. Yeah. So, like I'm saying, if you've got it, like Cameron Ling would still be successful or that type, but if you don't bat that deep, that guy becomes your ball winner. Mm.
Guys, explain the similarities between Petrarca and Martin and then the differences in the role that they play and I guess their abilities now.
Well, I think Martin these days is more predominantly just that forward player. He'll pop up to a stoppage and a centre bounce if he needs to get things rolling, get in the game. But
so at his best, Martin's year this year was sort of a bit like Richmond's. It wasn't what we expected, but over the dominant period of Richmond and Martin, is it a similar role or
Martin's
is it different?
Martin's not as dominant around stoppage.
Yeah.
I think that's where Petrarca's different. He's more dominant around stoppage. Martin's able to get the ball probably a little bit more in general play, being almost like first receiver, and then able to burst through. Whereas Petrarca can take the ball off contest and go from there. So they're slightly different players. Martin is probably more crafty forward when he's playing deep, I think.
Yeah.
You look at, he's rarely, rarely outmarked, Dustin Martin, inside forward 50.
Martin's best was good. It was clearly very good.
Good.
Better than good.
Good.
It was very, very good.
Jeez, but, you're a tough.
Well, that's the coach in me, Jim.
Who's better?
I'm never happy as a coach. Yeah. You know what it's like.
You would have been a tough prep teacher giving away those wood stickers that you used to get.
No, I think he's more forward mid than mid forward. Dusty's sort of impact in the game. Petrarca's a much better midfielder, I reckon, than Dusty ever was. And just the way he plays that position. I think Rammer's point's valid there. But Martin's heaps better forward than Petrarca.
There's an interesting text that has come in, which I really agree with, about disposal skills is the difference with Petrarca and some of the other, say, power mids in the game. So, say, a Dangerfield or even a Fife. That's the one thing that Petrarca has that Dustin Martin has. They're a good user of the football. They kick it well.
Well, Petrarca had, 39. He went at 74%.
But even that first goal he kicked, he's on the run, a lot of pressure around him, outside 50. You kind of expect him to kick it because he's a really good kick. Whereas a lot of the other players that we think are in, say, the top 10 in the competition, you're not necessarily expecting them to kick it.
A worthy winner was Christian of the North Smith Medal on Saturday night. No doubt joins Jimmy's illustrious club.
I drove past the Petrarca family home yesterday.
Just to pop in and say good day?
Just to pop in and say good day. And on their garage door, there is a massive, one of those massive posters with Petrarca.
Come on, Petrarcas.
Just massive of Christian. It looks pretty cool. There's Melbourne stuff everywhere with his on the garage door, the whole garage door.
That's enough.
Just Petrarca.
You can't be doing that with your family. Take it down, please. Take it down. And who else would you want presenting Jimmy Bartel?
Could have got Basil to present Jimmy Bartel and he would have forgotten.
He wouldn't have let Jimmy have a say. He wouldn't have introduced Jim. There's an awkward couple of moments for Basil. We'll talk about that shortly. Don't be going anywhere after the Monday Footy Review Grand Final Edition with Jimmy Bartel, either on RSN 927, because Michael Falgate's back on Racing Pulse from 8:30, and they have heaps to discuss on the verdict after some unbelievable racing across the weekend, Victoria, on Friday night and Saturday, and then, of course, in Sydney as well. So there's a heap to talk about in the world of racing with Blue Eyes and the team on Racing Pulse. And then in a very special edition of RSN Central, we have unleashed the beast, Matt Nevitt, the Hornet. He is a demon, tragic through and through, and we've given him the microphone from 10:30 to talk D's all afternoon.
He declared them premiers in about April, and never deviated, never got nervous, was confident the whole way through they were going to win.
So we've given him the opportunity to just bask in the glory and take everyone along the ride with him on RSN Central from 10:30 this morning. So don't miss that with the Hornet a little bit later on this morning. Now, you talk about predicting Matty Nevitt predicting that they were going to be the grand finalists in the premiership team, Jim. 2 years ago, James, this Melbourne team won five games. 17th on the ladder, and there are five games. 2 years ago.
So what's that? You can't remember that actually happening.
That was off the back of a prelim.
That's right. There's all this year in between.
Off the back of a prelim. But that 2 years ago, they were 17th with five wins. So we started to ask about outlier. Which was the outlier? Was it that year? Was it 2018? Prelim year was the outlier because that was a bolt from the blue as well. And all of a sudden, their premiers, Jim, five games to 20 games in the home and away and then going through and sweeping a final series like they did with some of the most emphatic football I think we've ever seen. How does that happen, Jim? Who gets the credit for that? Is it the list manager? Is it the footy manager? Is it the coaching staff? Is it the players? Who gets the credit for that? Because that is unusual. That doesn't happen very often, Jim.
A bit of everybody. And sorry, I can't give you the exact answer, but you need buy-in from the players to actually believe it. You need coaches to set the tone, the agenda, but then celebrate it. So if you want full team commitment to the actual team and the cause, you need to celebrate the roles of Neil Bullen and Brayshaw and these sort of guys and Harrison Petty just as much as you celebrate Gorn, Petrarca, all these sort of guys, Oliver. So you need to actually have complete buy-in to whatever your themes or you call it your cultural stuff, all that sort of, the lingo that gets thrown around sporting clubs now. So you need complete buy-in. You need to be aligned with your strength and conditioning so you have fit players. That year that they only won five games, all we heard about was Melbourne players, three quarters of them hadn't even trained since February sort of stuff. Everyone was having surgeries. So you need a lot of luck on your side because fitness and key personnel, you do need your best players available. And you look at depth, and depth comes from not only having blokes fit, but it's also your development as well. Like I'm talking your nuts and bolts, your fundamentals of the game. So when young players come in, they improve quickly. And like Jackson, Bowie, 19, 20, Cozzy Pickett, Trent Rivers, 20, Tom Sparrow, Harrison Petty, Charlie Spargo, 21. But then, they put pressure on the likes of, I think if we thought they would have won a premiership, if you went back to the start of the year, you probably would have had Melksham,
yep,
Jones, Jeddah in the side, wouldn't you?
Yep, that's a good point.
And then, obviously, Petty to be able to just step in and you get no drop-off from Tomlinson. It's a whole club thing.
But that's the change, Whitey, there. So it's personnel. What's actually changed? They've gone that youth. Also, Brown and Langdon come in. So,
May and Lever.
They were there.
So there were five players that have come from other clubs that are in the final 23. So that's quite a low amount with the way footy is now, with people changing clubs. But having said that, it's still a triumph in list management with the players that they went and targeted.
Yeah.
So, because Melbourne got it wrong for so many times. And they should give confidence to Carlton that you can turn it around. Because Melbourne and Carlton were the same. They kept getting all these picks and they couldn't capitalise on it. But to get May, Lever and Langdon and Brown to play specific roles that they went and got from other clubs, nailing drafts, which they've done as well over the last 6 or 7 years.
There would have been a point in the year where Simon Goodwin and his match committee have gone, do we keep rolling with these young guys? Because there would have been the temptation, as Jim was speaking about there, Melksham and Jones.
Jaden Hunt.
Well, Jaden Hunt was injured.
Yeah, but he still was available at different times.
No, but he just didn't get to the line in the end. He had that syndesmosis injury, so he just didn't get there in the end. But the other two is that Neil Ball and Tom McDonald, Melbourne were happy for them to go last season. And they both had terrific years. Neil Bullen had 24 possessions on Saturday night, had a really strong game. So it's all going to work. They basically had one player on their injury list going into a grand final. That was Adam Tomlinson.
The other thing that I reckon that helped, and I don't know, just from the outside looking in, that would have helped them make those decisions on whether you back the young players in, is the fact that you look at the coach, he had two premierships by 31 games.
Yeah.
I think he was almost like a Jake Bowie. he played halfback in his first grand final. I think it might have been game 9 for Simon Goodwin, around about that. And then the following year, he's played 2 premierships, 31 games in. So I think it helps that a senior coach goes, if he's good enough, he's good enough. And we don't have to look for anything extraordinary. They keep playing good footy. Well, they don't lose their spot.
Yep. That's a good point. It's a very good point on that. I reckon that's something that hasn't been discussed too much either, just by the way. You talk about their list health and condition. Darren Burgess is their high-performance
This is a big
chief,
story, this.
Who's put that program together clearly in the last couple of years. Now, there's an element of luck in all this because it's a collision sport as well. If you haven't got collision injuries, it's a fantastic result because if you can manage soft tissue and load injuries, then you're halfway there. Melbourne seem to have done that beautifully this year. But Darren Burgess is looking to get back to South Australia, and there is high discussion that he's going to the Adelaide Crows to head up their fitness and conditioning. So what does that do when you've got a guy that's been able to put this plan in place, Jim, and you're dealing with a club level these days as director and putting personnel in these spots? Putting a guy like that, taking that out of the program, even though it's all set up, taking that guy and his expertise and wisdom out of the program and not having it there going forward, how big a hole is that, or can they cover that going forward?
Well, you can try and use it as a bonus or a plus, and it's all on good terms by the sounds of it. He wants to go back to South Australia where he's originally from, and you want to sit him down and whatever knowledge we haven't drained out of Darren Burgess, we're trying to get down.
Yep.
So you want to absolutely absorb it. You want to have had someone sitting right under his wing the whole entire year, and then you go find someone who can add to that. So you're constantly just layering on top of it, of what has come before you. And I'll use the Geelong example. Our first strength and conditioning guys were very good at teaching lifting heavy, lifting big weights, all that sort of stuff. The next guys were about, that long sort of cardio stuff. Then the guys who came in after that were big on the repeat effort. So you're just constantly layering on top. So you'd be trying to find someone, obviously, we all know he's absolutely at the pinnacle of strength and conditioning, Darren Burgess.
Yep.
But you hope you've just absolutely taken all his IP and got it down.
That was the best of The Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.